Genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brain.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Ah, then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turning now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Hi, this is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We're on every day, Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock here on KKZZ, AM 1400. We're positive talk radio for Ventura County. You can also hear us streaming over the internet at brainstormingonline.com. My goal is to bring you interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. Together, we'll listen to what these people say and relate it to how we live and work here in Ventura County. If all of this sounds like National Public Radio, well, you're getting the idea. Brainstorming with Billy the Brain is NPR done right. If you want to join in the conversation, you can always call us at 639-0008, or if you're outside of the county, it's area code 805-639-0008. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is burning issues. Each of my three guests has a topic that every listener should be thinking about. My first guest has written a biography of one of the greatest financial reformers after the crash of 1929, Ferdinand Pecora. We'll look at the impact of the reform, both positive and negative, as we evaluate how the current efforts at reform pale in significance. My second guest is a famous actor who will talk about the need for reform in our political discourse and human rights reform. My third guest will discuss a fascinating subject of how technology has a life of its own and how it will reform itself unless we seize control of it. And again, I invite you to join in the conversation by calling at 639-0008. Michael Perino is currently the Dean at George Matheson Professor of Law at St. John's School of Law in New York City. He previously taught out at Stanford, woohoo, and Columbia Cornell Law Schools as well. Professor Perino has authored numerous articles and discussions. He's testified in both the United States Senate and the House of Representatives. His comments have appeared in profiled in New York Times, The Wall Street Journal, The Economist, a lot of the places that we usually read. And he's appeared on The American Life, All Things Considered, Morning Edition, Marketplace, National Public Radio, and my favorite, CNBC. Welcome to the show, Michael. How are you doing today?
I'm great. Thanks for having me, Bill.
Well, it's our pleasure because you've written such an interesting book. First of all, I love the title of your book. And for people who don't know the title, it is The Hellhound of Wall Street. I mean, any book that can use the hellhound in its title is cool. The subtitle is How Ferdinand Pecora, Investigation of the Great Crash, Forever Changed the Financial Finance. And you know, I just love the investigation. I love the story behind it. It almost reads like fiction. But if you would, give us kind of the overview of Mr. Pecora, the role that he played in changing American financial reform.
Sure, happy to do it, and glad you like the book so much. So let me take you back to the winter of 1933. In a decade of the Great Depression, this was the worst time. We're talking about unemployment at 25%. Hoovervilles and breadlines across the landscape. And by March 4th, 1933, the day that Franklin Roosevelt was inaugurated, 38 of the 48 states had closed their banks entirely. And the remaining 10 states, you can only get out about 5% of your money. This was the bottom of the Great Depression.
Mm.
Pecora comes to Washington. He takes over as counsel for a Senate Banking Committee investigation of Wall Street that has pretty much stumbled along ineffectively for an entire year, uncovering nothing. And it's about to end, and everyone has essentially written off the investigation. As a matter of fact, Pecora only gets the job after five other people turn it down. And his job is really to do mop-up work. He is supposed to just write a report about what the investigation has uncovered so far, which is essentially nothing. He convinces the committee chairman to let him take one more set of hearings. And he decides that he wants to put on the stand the preeminent banker of his day, Charles Mitchell, the head of the National City Bank, which we know today as Citigroup.
Right.
Just as the banking crisis of 1933 is reaching its peak, Mitchell is on the witness stand in Washington. And Pecora proceeds to show all of the wrongdoing that Citibank had engaged in the run-up to the 1929 crash. He made Americans angry. And that anger translated into a push for financial reform. At this point, Washington had never regulated Wall Street. There was not a single law in place regulating stock trading or the sale of securities. Pecora changed all that. And as a result of his hearings, we got the first federal securities laws, we got the Glass-Steagall Act, and we got the creation of the SEC and the FDIC, all as a result of these Pecora hearings run by this Italian immigrant from New York.
Well, it's interesting. We're talking to Michael Perino, everybody, author of the book The Hellhound of Wall Street. And it is interesting that you yourself said it, that this was grand theater. I mean, he came in for this last round, or what turned out to be not the last round, of investigations. And he really brought it to people's attention. And I agree with that. I would say, however, that probably the American people were pretty well disgusted at that point, because we were now almost 3 years into the Depression after the Great Crash. And they just didn't have any way to focus their anger. And so what Pecora does is he comes in and he gives them the scapegoat. I mean, wasn't all of this grand theater really designed to find a scapegoat for what was happening? So, and also as a byproduct for Franklin Delano Roosevelt to push through financial reform. He needed a bad guy, and so Pecora gave him that bad guy.
I think you're largely right, although I'm going to disagree a little bit. And here's the way I would phrase it. Americans were angry, but their anger was unfocused at this time.
Mm-hmm.
And what they assumed was that the folks on Wall Street, and what they thought basically was that it was the sort of, if you will, the bottom dwellers on Wall Street, the short sellers, the market manipulators, they assumed that they did anything legal or illegal to make money. What they didn't know is whether those problems went up to the elite leaders of the biggest firms on Wall Street. So what Pecora did was, I think, created, and it was theater. He was able to take complex economic matters and turn them into simple morality plays. Where I disagree with you, though, is I don't think it was scapegoating. For Pecora, Mitchell and the rest of the bankers he put on were not the scapegoats for the crash and the Depression. What he was putting them on for was as examples of what had gone wrong on Wall Street. He never said Mitchell caused the crash or Mitchell caused the Depression. He said, these are the problems that existed on Wall Street. I'm going to give you an example of this. And giving you an example of this is a much better way to present it to the American public in a way that they can understand than just talking generally about the problems that might exist in securities trading.
All right, well, let's continue down this vein, because I'm going to take another approach at this and give you another example. I think one of the interesting things about Ferdinand Pecora, they came up with the term banksters, which was the combination of bankers and gangsters. And gangsterism, as you know, with Al Capone and John Dillinger, Bonnie and Clyde, was very rampant at this time. So that struck a chord with the American people. But in reality, the negative consequence of that was, well, these are banksters. They're holding us hostage. Banks are evil. And when Bonnie and Clyde go in to rob a bank and they kill somebody, or Dillinger goes into a bank and kills somebody, the American public actually idolized Bonnie and Clyde and Dillinger as a result of this. So there's some negative effect, and we were praising law-breaking people instead of law-abiding citizens.
Well, I don't know if we can hang that reaction on Ferdinand Pecora. If you look at this time period, there is such economic deprivation in the country at that point that the rule of law is beginning to break down. I mean, there are situations where people are breaking into company stores and just taking stuff off the shelf.
Mm-hmm.
There were situations where miners, unemployed miners out in coal country, would basically go into the mines, pull out some coal, and sell it themselves. And when the mine owners tried to have those people arrested for trespass, and did have them arrested for trespass, the jury wouldn't convict. In foreclosure sales on farms across the Midwest, mobs of angry farmers would basically intimidate the auctioneers into selling the farms back to their original owners for pennies on the dollar. There was this sense in the country at the time that, you know, the normal rules don't apply.
Very similar to today. We're talking to Michael Perino, everybody. He wrote the book, The Hellhound of Wall Street, about Ferdinand Pecora. This is a long question, so I want to set this up for you, Michael. Ferdinand Pecora, when he was asked by President Roosevelt about the laws that came out of this, the founding of the SEC, the Glass-Steagall Act, and the FDIC, just some of the things that came out of this this investigation, he was asked, you know, do you think this is a good thing? And Pecora said, laws are neither good nor bad. It's how they're administered. And I thought that was fairly insightful. But I want to ask you, over time, did Ferdinand Pecora's efforts really make a difference? In other words, you know, did Ferdinand Pecora's laws, the legislation that came out of it, did it help us 75 years later? And here's how I'm going to set it up. Look at the first 10 years of the decade. Okay, we've had the Y2K scare, the dot-com boom, and then the bust. We had WorldCom, Enron, Global Crossing, Dow Jones at 14,000, Dow Jones dropping down to 9,750. The banking industry collapsed. Two of our big three automakers are bailed out by the government. Robert Rubin, who was President Clinton's Secretary of the Treasury, actually repealed the Glass-Steagall Act while he was there, or neutered it. The SEC, which was also a direct effect of Ferdinand Pecora, didn't understand CDOs. They didn't understand CDSs and some of the financial instruments that Wall Street people were using, so they couldn't effectively regulate it on it. In fact, even the FDIC, we had Sheila Bair, who's the head of the FDIC, and in my opinion, one of the heroes coming out of all of this, she was the lone voice in the woods saying, hey, we're headed off a cliff here. We're headed off a cliff. So all of this stuff that came after Ferdinand Pecora didn't really prevent the next big disaster, which was the 2008-2010 crash.
All right, let me answer that question in two parts. The first part is sort of what Pecora himself thought about this, and I want to follow up your quote with a different quote of his.
All right.
And then I'll answer with my own views on this. So in 1939, Pecora wrote his memoirs of the heroes.
Yes.
And he was already beginning to see that some of the lessons of the hearings were beginning to be lost, and that people were forgetting about how bad things were before. And he wrote his book called Wall Street Under Oath. And his last chapter is called A Word About the Future. And if you'll indulge me for a second, I just want to read you his last three sentences in the book. He said, "These laws are no panacea, nor are they self-executing. More than ever, we must maintain our vigilance. If we do not, Wall Street may yet prove to be not unlike that land of which it has been said that no country is easier to overrun or harder to subdue." What Pecora meant, and what he meant when he told Franklin Roosevelt that it depends on the men who administer them, is that passing a law doesn't really do anything. And if you look at the history of the securities markets and of banking, what you see is Congress acts in a fairly cyclical way, which is once there's a scandal, we pass new laws. But in the interim, we tend to carve those laws back. And what we've been in the last 30 years or so has been a huge effort to deregulate the financial markets. So I don't think we can say that the work that Pecora did back in the early 1930s has all been for naught because we've got these problems again. I think what we need to evaluate is whether we've carve back on the regulations too much and starve the regulators of so many resources that they can't enforce what's there.
Well, that's an interesting perspective, and I want to go down that path again. We're talking to Michael Perino, everybody, author of the book, The Hellhound of Wall Street. And here's the direction I want to go on that. You yourself said that the lawmakers make these laws looking in the rearview mirror. They're always looking backwards at the last disaster and then creating laws for it. Fundamentally, if you look at our business system and Wall Street in general, you got a lot of smart guys on Wall Street. They're quants that are coming out of MIT, Harvard, and everything else. Aren't the smart guys on Wall Street always going to be smarter than the smartest guys in Washington, D.C.?
There are always going to be smart guys on Wall Street. I think given what we pay regulators, it's going to be harder to attract smart guys to Washington. I think, though, that if you're smart about the way you regulate, if you don't just hire lawyers right out of law school to work at the SEC, but you bring in people with finance and economic backgrounds, and you devote sufficient resources to the SEC. If you look at Dodd-Frank, the financial reform bill that passed earlier this year,
yes,
one of the big things on the SEC's wish list was to get what every other financial regulator has, which is self-funding. If you look at the history of the SEC is actually a net moneymaker for the U.S. Treasury. What they collect in fees for securities offerings is far in excess of what their budget is. But
sure,
all that money goes to the Treasury, and then it's up to the committees that oversee the SEC to determine what the budget for the SEC is going to be. It's pretty easy if you don't want the SEC to be effective, if you want the SEC to be toothless, to just give them a skimpy budget. That's what the SEC was trying to get out of in Dodd-Frank, and they came real close to getting it. But essentially, the various appropriations committees in Congress decided they didn't want to give up their control.
Close, but no cigar, and I have real worries about Dodd-Frank. Michael Perino, we've only got about 40 seconds left. In the last 40 seconds, I always ask authors this. What did you get out of writing The Hellhound of Wall Street?
You know, for me, it was a very personal story. When I sat down to read Ferdinand Pecora's oral history a couple of years ago, I heard the history of my family. Here was this Italian immigrant who came over to the country in, and I guess this leads into your next piece, in a time of anti-immigrant sentiment. And he worked hard and became a hero for the country.
That is great. And it is a great book. If you're looking for somebody who's got a little bit of a financial background or is interested in this kind of thing, The Hellhound of Wall Street is available now. How Ferdinand Pecora's Investigation of the Great Crash Forever Changed the American Financial System. Michael, it's been a real pleasure debating this with you. I've enjoyed it. Thank you so much for being my guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain.
Thank you, Bill.
We'll talk to you down the road.